You ready, Jennifer? Thank you. Okay, we're going to get started.
Oh, is that engrossed? Oh, my God. Oh, it's something up there.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for March 11th. I'm going to ask if folks can settle down. I know it's an exciting bill and people are obviously very excited about it. We don't get out much in the Oregon legislature, so we're very excited about this. So I am going to go ahead and open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 692. And before I call up the first couple of folks, I just want to make a couple of comments for the record, because this is a bill that this is the fourth time this type of legislation has been before the legislature since I've been around. I worked on this bill in 2003 was the first time, and you're going to hear why this bill is needed. You're going to hear about why, if you've read the bill, which I'm sure you all have, I know Senator Olson has, why do we have so much detail in the bill versus through our administrative branch and through rule. And part of that, as you're going to hear, is that we've been trying to keep up with the state of California, or keep consistent with the state of California, with our energy efficiency standards. So that's what the intent of this bill is, and every few years we've been adding some more products. So just wanted to get that on the record before you hear some testimony, because this is a committee bill, and as it was at the request of the chair, has been working on this issue for over a decade. So that's why the folks in the room look pretty familiar. It's the same people. Okay, with that, we will call up Jeff Bissonette from the Citizens Utility Board and Charlie Stevens. Mika.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So while they're coming up, a quick question. I vaguely remember about 8 years ago, we were looking at a situation where the states around us had established and were only accepting high energy or high efficient systems, and the rest of them were being dumped into Oregon. Is that still going on?
Well, that's part of why I worked on the bill the first time, and that's one of the reasons we've been trying to stay consistent with our surrounding states so Oregon doesn't end up with
all back in that same situation
with the inefficient appliances. And I think you're going to hear more from some of the folks today. And I was looking at the different bills over the weekend, and some of the couple of notes that I came up with, which I thought was pretty interesting, about that refrigerators today use 40% less energy than conventional models did in 2001.
And they keep the beer colder.
It keeps the beer colder. Senator Prenasi, hopefully listening. And that, so this is probably, you know, one of the most effective ways to reduce energy is through energy efficiency. And so that's part of why I started looking at this in 2003. And I learned a lot about it back then, and constantly learning more. And I was just reading through California's regulations this weekend. I don't have a very exciting life. But it was good to see what they're working on and make sure that we are consistent. And that was, of course, one of the questions I was going to ask some of the panels today. But with that, I'll let Jeff, if you want to get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers of utilities. And we got involved in appliance efficiency standards pretty much the same time that then Representative Dingfelder did, and for a pretty key reason. Right now, residential ratepayers pay a lot for energy efficiency, and it's a good investment, and the cheapest kilowatt hour is the one you don't have to produce in the first place. The interesting thing, though, is that the further up you go in kind of the food chain, if you will, the cheaper those savings are. And so if you can actually start at the manufacturing level and achieve efficiencies and making sure that appliances are being built to certain standards, it really doesn't cost very much. And you're going to hear more about that here in just a minute. And if you make those same adjustments at the retailer level, it costs a little more. And if you're making them at sort of the utility level or ratepayer level, again, still cost effective, but it is costing more. And so the more that you can do further up the chain, the better it is for everybody. And also, too, because we have a state directly to our south that tends to, one, be able to set standards that are, you know, pretty future-looking and tend to follow a good path, we could adopt those same standards on our own, but Oregon is a very small state. California is one of the largest economies in the world, and they can really help define and transform the market, and you're going to hear more about market transformation efforts also here in just a little bit. But the other thing, because it is directly to our south, we want to be able to forestall any sort of dumping of any, inefficient appliances once they can't be sold in California. And so those are really the underlying factors for these types of bills. As Senator Dingfelder said, this is the fourth round we've had. And we've been fortunate enough to be able to adopt them. And then because different states start to adopt them, the manufacturers say, well, let's go and not only just do it in California, but wherever we're selling these products, let's just make the national standard. And so five of the standards that we've adopted over the years have actually become federal standards. With that, I'll stop and turn it over to Charlie Stevens with NEA, who can take you as far into the weeds as you'd like to go. Thank you, but I'd be happy to answer questions at an appropriate time.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. I'm Charlie Stevens. I'm the Senior Codes and Standards Engineer at the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance. We try to accelerate the pace of energy efficiency in the four states of the Pacific Northwest. And good codes and standards are one of the things that we do at the very end of a market transformation initiative. And we have been working very hard on some of the things that are in this bill today and invested quite a lot of money to sort of prepare us for this place we are today. I'm going to address each section kind of in order of complexity, so we'll get past the big stuff first and the simplest stuff last, so I'll start with televisions. I've provided some handouts there. There's two sets. One is sort of a market-related set, and it starts out with sort of an ENERGY STAR set of graphs, and it has the graph of the California standards on it there in the front page. The other set is from the federal analysis that is somewhere in the weeds in Washington, D.C. We don't know where it went, but it's been there for a long time, but they did do some analysis of televisions and showed us how we're measuring television energy consumption today. So I'll refer to that as we go along. First of all, the standards here that are proposed are identical to those in California with one exception, and that is there's no limitation on screen size, but that is the same standard that has been in effect in British Columbia now for more than a year. So British Columbia and we are the beneficiaries of better, newer information about where the market is today, and we've discovered that it's quite easy for the larger screen, as easy for the larger screen sizes to meet the standard as the smaller ones. So there was no need anymore. California didn't have the benefit of the early information when they did their standards, but if they were to do it today, they would do it without a screen size limitation as well. And I was in the room with them last week. There have been stakeholders in the past that suggested that the sky would fall if these regulations were put in place, but that has turned out not to be the case. So as it turns out, televisions are getting more efficient. New technology is making that possible. There are still laggards in the marketplace. There are still people who are amortizing old investments. But there is quite a distribution of energy efficiency. My organization has worked very hard to try to make the best televisions available to the consumers in the Pacific Northwest, and so our market share of those tends to be a little higher thanks to our investments in making that happen. In spite of the significant strides made in television energy efficiency, there's two fairly significant reasons why standards are still important today. One of those reasons has to do with that set of graphs I showed you on the federal test procedure. These are the graphs that are labeled figures 1.3.5 through 1.3.8. Those are the test results of testing a television's energy consumption at different room illuminance levels. And you can see in some of the graphs, the best one is 1.3.6. You can see that some televisions brightness and therefore power consumption rises as the room illuminance grows, and other televisions, as soon as there's any light whatsoever in the room, immediately go to nearly full power. Right now, the test procedure allows the manufacturers to test a television at zero illuminance in the room. In other words, they literally put a piece of tape over the sensor. And at 300 lux, which is brighter than the brightest sunshine you can imagine outdoors. And then they average those results. If you're a television manufacturer who jumps up to nearly full power almost immediately, you're getting quite an advantage because your average is makes it look a lot better than it really is. So the federal test procedure is in process right now. We think it will finish this year. It should have finished more than a year ago, but we think it will finish this year. And once it does, we'll start measuring televisions differently. But fortunately, technology has moved far enough that we believe that most televisions will still be able to meet the standard. There may be a few laggards, but we are quite confident that most televisions, at least in the Northwest, where we've substantially transformed the market, will meet the standard. The other reason is because televisions are changing. Televisions are requiring new functionality, and one of those functionalities, for instance, is called network standby. They're starting to build in network capability for internet streaming into the television. And it's possible to do this function badly, with a power consumption when it's not being used of something on the order of 9 watts, and it's possible to do it much better with maybe 1 to 3 watts in network standby mode. The standards will probably ensure that they have to do it well, because if you don't, your energy consumption on a television would be 20, even 25% higher if we do it badly. And at 40 kilowatt hours or so per year per television and the millions of televisions in the Pacific Northwest, that adds up to gigawatt hours of energy consumption actually for no purpose. So it is possible. We've seen badly done network standby, and we're hoping the federal test procedure will acknowledge it, though so far they haven't. But this will help us ensure that the television manufacturers do their technology well. The standards being proposed are somewhat less stringent from the current Energy Star 5.3 level, which is a good thing because Energy Star should be leading us all. 6.0 goes into effect, and you can see on the graphs that I showed you, there's another graph on 42-inch TVs. You can see not only what the standard levels are, but you can also see the timing that occurred and how we've stepped down in power consumption and how the Energy Star spec has stepped down with it. And version 6 is coming up starting in April 1st. So you can sort of see the progression we're following on. You can see that the California standard went effective after Energy Star 4.0. So it was essentially Energy Star 4.0 is what was adopted. And, of course, Energy Star, as you see on the graph, led the standard, which is the way it should be. You can also see on another page in the market area, TV trends since 2006, you can see that the screen size is getting larger. That's another reason why standards can become important. But energy has been declining. That's a good thing. Price has been declining as well. And in part, that's due to the technology shift. We're shifting mostly from backlighting, from cold cathode fluorescent lighting to LED lighting. And that makes it possible to be a lot more efficient with the main power draw on a television, which is the screen backlighting. And power density in watts per square inch also going down. So no matter how big the television is, the absolute power is going down, which is a good thing. But, like I say, functionality is changing, and we're a little worried that when they start adding features to these things, unless there's some sort of a cap on this, it will get worse. Now, I want to shift to battery chargers, if that's okay. Basically, battery chargers have been a small and background consumer of electricity for a long time. Most of the inefficiency concerns charging the battery when it's fully charged, power consumption when the battery is fully charged. About 60% of the battery charging energy is wasted right now. The standard that you see will impact about half of that, or about a 30% savings. And it simply consists of charge control, not charging the battery when it's already full. We, again, tried to make these standards exactly comport with California, including the effective dates. The small battery chargers are going on first, and some of the non-consumer battery chargers come in later in 2017. When these standards were done in California, the federal analysis was going on at the same time, and so California had the benefit of actually working with that analysis and aligning their analysis with the federal analysis, or helping the federal analysis get better. And in the end, everybody pretty much got on the same page with the analysis. For the small battery chargers, the cost of implementing this charge control circuit is between 35 cents and a dollar. It's about 45 cents for a cell phone. And so these products cost anywhere from, say, $30 to several hundred dollars, and the charge control that we're talking about here for the charger that's packaged with it, the incremental cost of doing this technology is about 50 cents on average.
I have a question for you, Charlie, though.
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt, but as you're talking about the cost for making these changes, can you talk about, do you have numbers for the cost savings, the cumulative cost savings for making these changes in here? And I know we're going to hear a little bit from Department of Energy, but have you done that analysis?
The analysis is more in terms of energy savings.
Mm-hmm.
The savings.
That's
Oregon,
what I'm saying, energy savings.
The energy savings is about 24 average megawatts, or 210,000 gigawatt hours after 7 years, which is when the battery charger standards will, when the stock will have fully turned over. So about 210,000 gigawatt hours. The problem with these is there's about 11 of them and growing per household. And they use this power, kind of a lot of them, 24/7. It adds up. It adds up. There are millions of them. It's enough power to power about 30,000 homes by the time we implement this. The payback period for a consumer on this is anywhere from about 3 months to 18 months for the smaller chargers, and up to about 3 years for the larger ones. So it's a very cost-effective way to get energy savings. And it's not a place where a manufacturer is going to invest a lot of research, a lot of effort, or any incremental cost, unless they have to, because it's a trivial piece of equipment. It's not what Apple, for instance, concentrates on when they make their product. They don't really look that hard at the charger.
So we have quite a few questions. So do you have more that you want to present? And I know that Department of Energy is going to come up and walk through the bill section by section, but why don't we take, can we take questions?
Sure,
done
certainly.
With your presentation, I just didn't want to...
No, I'm down to court's lamps.
Thank you. You made a statement, sir, that you just said the payback is between what?
3 months and 18 months.
You're talking about just for the charger.
Just for the charger.
He's not talking about all of
I understand it, yeah.
Right,
So my point being is that most people turn their phones over every 2 years, so they really, you know, are they going to get what I'm looking at is how much more does it cost them for this new technology?
The phone,
the energy.
The phone payback is about 4 months.
4 months?
Right.
Okay. Did you have a question, Senator?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted, when did California pass its... what's the status?
It was in January of 2012, and they're in effect now.
They're in effect now.
Right. There's over 2,600 products that are certified to their database today for every product you can possibly imagine with a battery charger.
Is there anything we can learn from them that they did right or wrong, on which we can base decisions here, or did they do it all right? I mean, California... sometimes it's a good example, sometimes not. So I just want to know how closely we should align ourselves with what they did.
Well, I was involved in the California process quite closely, and it was about a year to a year and a half delayed because they did not want to do it wrong, and they took a substantial amount of input from the manufacturers of the products, from the federal analysis, because it was running behind California. But they waited, they got the good numbers, they vetted this with all the manufacturers, they researched everything, they called in experts. This is about as thoroughly vetted a standard as I've ever seen California do, so I'm quite confident that it's a good standard.
Other questions for Senator Bates?
I don't get many chance to ask an engineer a question.
I was going to say I'm married to one, so I get to ask him every day.
You got an advantage there. So one of my pet peeves about this kind of situation, I can remember a day when we had universal chargers, and we had it for AA's and AAA's and C's and whatnot, and that was what we ran most of our electrical devices on. Now I have drawers and drawers and drawers of chargers for things I don't even know what they go for. It looks like a snake's in there.
Is there any movement, as we're talking about energy efficiency, this goes back to your question, really, of having some universal chargers here? I mean, every device has a separate and different kind of charger. I don't know what the energy efficiency of them are. And usually within a year or two, you're throwing them away because the device they're running is either outdated or broken. And you're, you know, you're trying to get them recycled if you can. But is there any movement or discussion about that at all, of getting more universality? So if you have an iPhone, you can buy a charger for the next five versions of it or something? Seems to me that would be some efficiencies built into the system, too.
You're right. There's one thing mitigating for that, and that is people like Texas Instruments, who last summer came out with a charge control circuit that can actually manage the charge of any number of different voltages, current flows, and battery chemistries, actually is taking a step in that direction and making it possible. However, mitigating against that is the battery chemistries themselves. These batteries are kind of different. A lithium battery is quite different than a nickel metal hydride or a lead acid battery. And so it, to the extent that the chemistries are different, they have to be managed differently, not only for safety, but for lifetime and charge management. And so it, to some extent, I think we'll see some of that, but I don't think you're going to see it universally because there's just too many differences in the chemistries.
Okay. Thank you.
That was an interesting answer. I hadn't heard that part of it. So I think what we're going to do is have the Department of Energy come up and just quickly walk us through the sections, and then if we have additional questions, Charlie, we may call you back up to answer in the level of detail you might be able to provide. So thank you for your work on this and for
being
here.
Thank you very much.
So we have Marty Stipe and John Audley. They're going to give us the Cliff Note version of the bill, just so to make sure that when you are reading this, all 44 pages, you know exactly what you're looking at. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Audley. I'm the Division Administrator of the Planning, Policy, and Technical Analysis Division of the Oregon Department of Energy. With me is my colleague Marty Stipe, a facilities engineer at the Oregon Department of Energy. We're here to describe Senate Bill 692. Rather than go through a lengthy preface, I think what I'll do is turn it over to Marty. What I want to emphasize, however, is that this effort under the auspices of the Pacific Coastal Collaborative over the past few years, four U.S. states and one Canadian province have worked together to improve the efficiency standards for key consumer products. In some respects, this bill is a product of that effort. It would align Oregon with appliance standard-setting efforts in both Washington and California. It proposes to add four products, plumbing fixtures, battery chargers, televisions, and light bulbs, to existing Oregon product standards. Should you and your colleagues decide to move this bill forward, we believe it would contribute to the state's efforts to reduce water use and electricity use. So now to Marty. Thank you.
And just to clarify, this is a complete getting stuff of the bill. And so for folks that are following along, you should be looking at the Senate Bill 692, the -1 amendments.
Madam Chair, thanks for that correction.
Chair Dengfelder, members of the committee, my name is Marty Stipe with the Oregon Department of Energy. I'll first point out on the notes that you just received, the section by section, I'd originally drafted it for the original version of this bill, so the page numbers are slightly different as I go through. I'll direct you to those as we go forward. So again, you heard earlier, this bill is addressing adding products to Oregon's appliance standards statute. Those fixtures include plumbing, those appliances include plumbing fixtures, televisions, battery chargers, and some specific light bulbs per se. In section one, it's dealing with the definitions that are for the plumbing fixtures, televisions, and battery chargers. And so they're really just adding a few definitions that help define the scope and make sure those are clear as it goes forward. Section 2 starts on page 7. It again addresses the definitions that are in statute, and this one section addresses just the definitions for the light bulb. And you'll see as you go through this bill that it's basically there's a section on three of the appliances and then the section on the light bulb. So again, that section gets down into some specifics on exactly the definition of the quartz halogen lamp being addressed. So, and it's different because the dates, they've aligned the effective dates are different for the televisions, battery chargers, and plumbing fixtures, and the effective dates for the light bulbs are a few years later, so they're separated.
Just for clarity, these effective dates align with the state of California, is that correct? Or how did we come up with those dates?
Those dates align with the state of California.
Thank you.
So Section 3 gets into the efficiency standards for the different types of appliances. It starts out with the plumbing fixtures, and that deals with saving water, which saves both water and associated electric energy with pumping and heating the water, and then in the wastewater treatment plant downstream. The section has standards for television that Charlie got into quite a bit, you heard a moment ago. And it addresses energy efficiency both for operations and standby. The battery chargers have a really wide variety of chargers. They're small, the types that you use from electric toothbrushes all the way up to golf carts. And so they're categorized in the standards as both large and small. And in the definitions, they define the earlier sectional definitions, they define the differences between the two. Section 4 gets into the efficiency standard of the light bulb by itself. And that is, the light bulb standards that's being proposed is approximately 20% less. It's at least 20% better than the existing light bulbs of the similar type. Section 5 and 6 address part of the statute that says if these items are to be offered for sale, then they must comply with the energy efficiency standard. And that's just basically these appliances get added to the list of appliances that have to comply with the energy efficiency standard. Sections 7 and 8.
Let them finish going through the whole thing.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Done. Yeah.
Oh, the page numbers, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go back. Sections 5 and 6 start on page 40.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sections 7 and 8 start on page 42. And that is similar, that in order to be installed in the state of Oregon, these appliances need to comply with the efficiency standards specified back in Section 3 and 4. So this is how it's all tying together. Section 9 is a reference section that points out that the unit captions are for the convenience of the reader. And Section 10 on the last page, I believe it's page 44, is addressing the implementation dates. And if you scan through that section, you'll notice that it's sections 2, 4, 6, and 8, which are at a later date, and those are related to the light bulbs.
Okay. Senator Olson had a question.
Yes, a couple, if you don't mind. On the large battery chargers, are they related or are they used in automobiles, our new electric cars, or is that standard difference? And is this a different type of large battery charger?
I'm not certain about the specific, the cars. These are, I think they had a capacity, the size, actually it was the charging capacity of the charger. So it had to do more with the capacity than the end use.
So, well, bottom line is
so, hold on, Charlie's shaking his head back there. So we'll have, Charlie, why don't you come up? I'm going to have Charlie come sit up with us since we have a third chair, and he worked on these, and I want to make sure that we're getting this right. So, Charlie, can you restate your name for the record, please?
Yeah, Charlie Stevens from Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance. Vehicle battery chargers of the type that you're referring to were specifically exempted from the standards. They are not covered by the standards. The largest vehicle that is covered by the standard is a golf cart.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be?
Because it was not the intent of these standards to cover something that was in flux. Automobile charging standards are being developed by other people, and they just aren't ready, I think, for universal regulation of efficiency at this point. They're still vetting how they work. So specifically, it was the intent of the the standards in California to exempt them. Personalized scooters and wheelchairs and those things are covered. Forklifts are covered. Golf carts are covered. Nothing that you would register as a motor vehicle is covered.
Okay. Did you have other questions?
I did.
Yeah.
On the water closets, the water efficiency, we have one question I had. You said for heated water, I didn't know the heated water and
Senator Olson.
In toilets. And
you don't have that in your house?
No, I don't. I
thought everybody did.
And if I did, I wouldn't know.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson. The energy savings with water closets come from the pumping energy at the water plant and the wastewater treatment facility. The energy savings from heating comes from the water standards from lavatories and sinks, where we're saving hot water at the sink.
Okay, follow up on that. Have you calculated the increased cost for the new toilet standards, what it costs to build the new toilets, and what it costs a consumer for the new toilet, and what the payback would be on their savings?
Charlie, of course, has. So we should know.
Wait a minute.
All right, Charlie.
Senator Olson, Charlie Stevens from NEA. So far, the evidence in the marketplace is they're in wide use already in many of the buildings that are being rated for sustainable construction methodologies, and there doesn't appear to be any notable incremental cost. It's simply a way of designing them differently, but there's no parts in them that cost any more than other parts. It's simply a matter of design.
Good questions. Thank you. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How is this all enforced? I mean, this is not something that a consumer could look at or I could look at and just automatically say this is a 5-star, 6-star list. I started digging through it. How is this? What's the enforcement on this?
Senator Bates, there's a couple steps to the enforcement part. These appliances need to be registered. And currently, there's an online database that's maintained. It's a multi-state database. The manufacturers submit their appliances. Our agency reviews those and confirms there that the appliances are meeting the standards. In some cases, I believe the standards go into effect through building codes. And in other cases, for example, televisions, I'm not sure about. Maybe.
So I can, and I will probably ask Charlie to jump in again, but since this is not, as you could tell, there is many of this language is already in statute, so we've been implementing this program for quite a while. The one of the things I was going to just make sure, because this came up the last time, and I see some of the same people are going to testify that testified the last time about concerns for the retailer. We made sure that the onus is on the manufacturer, and since they're going to be doing it for California, that's one of the reasons we want to make sure that we're consistent with California's standards. So we are not asking the manufacturer to, A, design to different standards, or, B, meet at a different date, and the onus is on the manufacturer. That's one of the reasons we wanted, last time I recall, we had a lot of discussions about making sure that the impact wasn't for the retailer or the consumer, and I see Jim Craven shaking his head because we spent hours talking about that in the past. And so I wanted to know, and I know from Department of Energy, is this, I mean, as far as the implementation, I haven't heard in the 12 years that I've been here complaints ever from consumers about, you know, we weren't able to get the appliance, or if anything, it's been the other way, and the cost savings for the consumers. Can maybe any of you gentlemen speak to that from or maybe from California's perspective?
Senator Dingfelder, as you may know, or you know, and some others, I've been with the department for a total of 2 months. I know Charlie was instrumental in implementing the program in the past. My understanding is that it is designed so that manufacturers report to us. We check the information they share with us to verify that indeed their product meets the product standard. But Charlie?
That's true. Charlie Stevens from NEA. I think, relying to some extent on manufacturers themselves. Most manufacturers and their distributors, their distribution chain, are responsive to the standards. They do comply. And they don't take kindly to the ones who don't. And so when somebody doesn't comply, they tend to let the authorities know, and that has worked quite a bit to our benefit in California. And when we learn of something in California that has come up, we generally can look into it here, find out if it's being distributed here. So it to some extent, it's self-policing, because, again, most comply and want to comply and want to be seen as providing the most efficient stuff out there. And we so far haven't had too much of a problem that we know of.
And I will say for the record that when we worked on this the last three times, we made it very clear that the intent was, and when you read the language, it is the onus is on, it can't be for sale, the onus is on the manufacturer. And we wanted to make sure that the retailers were not going to be put in a bind, or consumers. The other thing is, I just want to emphasize and make sure I'm reading this right on section, I have my notes when I was going through the bill. Under the section 3, it only applies to, and that's in the new bill, so I don't know what page that's on now. Beth, maybe you can help me.
That section 3 is on page 14, I believe. Mm-hmm.
So these are for new products only. So as far as, tell us about the transition. So you have products that are on the shelf. How does that transition work? Because if these are, we're not saying you have to go back, a consumer doesn't have to go back and uninstall a product. Obviously, they have it in their home. It's not going to be illegal for them to use it, right? I want to make sure people listening know that it is for the sale of new products only. And can you talk a little bit about that transition and how you work with the retailers? This issue came up last time about making sure that there was lag time so the retailers weren't stuck with a lot of product on their shelf. Can you talk a little bit about how the manufacturers, and I know Jim Craven, who is not signed up, spent a lot of time working with us on it last time, so I may call him and ask him to talk about that transition.
Right. There's actually two transitions, I think, built into the system. One is the time between the passing of the legislation and the effective date of the standards, which is designed to some extent around how long it takes for the distribution chain to move product through the system. So the shorter lifetime products that sit on the shelf a much shorter period of time and move through the system faster often have a shorter time between the effective date of the legislation and the passage of the legislation. So some things like the larger battery chargers, for instance, need a longer time to comply, and so they're given a longer time. The second piece is that in Oregon, there's a gap between the sale date and the installation date. So you can actually buy something, and then there's a time period that you have to install it. So in other words, the installation time is later. So it's designed so that, yeah, you can buy them, even if you're going to install them later. So there tend to be inventory issues that will work themselves out, but we also try to make sure that everyone knows that this is coming.
And one last question. So these same standards were already adopted in California in 2012, is that correct?
Correct.
So manufacturers, this is not a surprise for manufacturers.
No, there's 2,640 of them on the registered database in California this morning. So they've already registered the products. There's complying product out there covering just about every device you can imagine. So one of the reasons why we try to get more states is because once the market hits a certain critical mass, that's pretty much what the manufacturers will make. And after that, you don't have to worry about it so much.
Right. Other questions? Senator Bates.
I'll go back to my question, and I don't feel I got it answered. How do you really know what's happening out there? I mean, for instance, I go to a large wholesaler or retailer, and I buy a television set. How do I know that it meets these standards? They didn't bring it in from another state that doesn't have these standards. They brought a truckload in and put them out there. And I mean, you're not spot checking, you're not following. In other areas of state government, we spot check and look at things. So you really, sounds to me like you're on a system where it's self-reporting and where other manufacturers say, hey, look, you're not following standards in Oregon or California. But what I think I'm hearing is other states don't have these standards necessarily, and there's no federal standards at this level either. Is that correct?
That's true. However, it's not true that we're not checking.
Okay, that's the question I get to
here. We spend a lot of money to check on what's being sold out there monthly.
So you do go, that's the question I was trying to answer. You actually do go out and spot check.
Oh, yeah, we do. And we work with the distributors and the big retailers directly.
That's fine. I did not hear that. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, when these things are this important, we actually do invest the time and the money. And fortunately, like I say, it's the other states without the standards that are going to get the TVs at the bottom of the efficiency scale.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, just to be clear, what Charlie's talking about is NEA is doing an excellent job of checking. The Department of Energy is charged with reconciling the information that manufacturers provide us with the standards to make sure that what they are reporting to be delivered to the state is indeed in compliance with standards. I think the other thing that impresses me about this approach and why I think the Western states' efforts to coordinate this is that now we're talking about markets of scale, if you will, so that it behooves a business person to market to not just the state of California, but the state of Oregon, and we are anticipating the state of Washington as well.
Madam Chair.
Yep, Senator Russell.
This goes back to, once again, my concern for the consumers, and I don't think I got the answer that I was looking for or expected. As you said, that the manufacturers police themselves if somebody's selling a product that's not efficient. And I see that as an answer to say that the manufacturers realize that to get the efficiency, it costs more. And so this retailer or this manufacturer is able to sell his product lower. That's why everybody turns him in, because on a competitive scale, he's moving product because it's cheaper than the new product that they have to produce. So the question I've asked a couple times is, what does it increase the cost of a urinal, a TV, or whatever to meet these new energy efficiencies? It's not minuscule. There's got to be a cost to it.
Senator Olson, let me give you an example of for television, since it's an important one. The newer televisions are all starting to use LED backlighting. As it turns out, LED backlighting actually does cost less than cold cathode backlighting. That's not to say that there aren't manufacturers out there that have fully amortized processes for installing and using cold cathode lighting out there. There are. And they can sometimes sell at a discount because their process is fully amortized. They aren't in the position of the LED manufacturers who have to amortize the cost of their equipment at that point. So the longer a technology remains in place, the cheaper it gets to some extent. And so what you see is some discounting of costs of the less efficient stuff over time. But the fact is, at retail, the LED stuff is no more expensive and, in fact, is less expensive in most cases because it actually turns out it's cheaper to manufacture LED backlights.
So, so basically then for the broad spectrum that we have here, there's no additional charge. The retailer doesn't have to pay any upcharge for any of these products to put into effect.
No. What happens is the manufacturers are selling for about the same price as the older televisions for a while. Until they're amortized, and then they become cheaper. And we're seeing that in the marketplace because, again, they have to amortize the equipment that it takes to make this stuff in the early years, but eventually the price declines. And the price declines, as I showed in the graphs that you have there that we've tracked the data on, about a 36% decline in the cost of a television for any given screen size. So it's happening.
But what about the light bulbs and the toilets and the battery chargers and all of that other stuff?
The light bulbs do cost a little bit more, about 15% more for about a 20% boost in efficiency. It turns out they have other benefits. They get a little bit of a lifetime boost, so the life cycle cost gets better. And we're only applying this to the highest wattage lamps because it's easiest to get that kind of efficacy out of the large ones. It's harder to do in the little ones, which is why you don't see a standard for those right now. But and those would cost more to get that level of efficiency in the smallest bulbs would definitely cost more, and they're not as cost-effective, so they're not covered in the same way in the standard. Okay. So we're mindful of very much so of what you're saying, and we only bring stuff we hope that we've demonstrated to be cost-effective.
Right. Thank you. And, you know, Charlie, it might be helpful if you want to follow up with a little chart for the committee. I think the questions that have been asked here are very good questions, where you're saying, you know, looking at what is the long-term, savings as far as, you talked about life cycle, we've seen with the televisions, they've actually have been coming down, and that one thing we didn't talk about is it should also cost the consumer less because they're paying less electricity to run them in the long term. But if you can put together for the new items, any type of chart, I think that would be helpful just to have it there in front of us. The section by section is helpful, but just looking at the chart and that research you've done is tremendous. So obviously you have a depth of knowledge on each of these products. So Senator Hansel?
I was just curious with all this new technology and the light bulbs and the urinals and that we're all looking at. Do we have any manufacturers of any of those products here in Oregon, or does it pretty much all come in from out of state?
That's a good question. I was thinking about that.
Sadly, Senator, I think most of it actually comes in from out of country. It's mostly manufactured in China, I think, these days, like so many other things. But there are a few things that are still done here. For instance, for the light bulbs, the efficient light bulbs actually are one of the things that are manufactured here in the U.S. They're not manufactured here in Oregon, but they are manufactured in the U.S. by Deposition Sciences in Santa Rosa, California, and Cleveland, Ohio. So there are a few, and that's because we figured out how to do this. And so all of the big manufacturers use Deposition Sciences products for their efficient light bulbs.
Thank you.
Great, excellent questions. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Charlie, maybe you should sit in the front row in case we need to call you back up again. Yeah. He's our answer man. Okay, speaking about light bulbs, Sean Miller. And we have Betsy Earls. Come up. Sean and I have gone around on light bulbs.
Light bulbs.
Remember the CFL?
Yeah.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the National Electrical Manufacturers Association. These are the lighting manufacturers, you know, like General Electric, Sylvania, and Philips that do produce and manufacture, you know, here in the U.S. I think some of the other issues we've dealt with in the past on these kind of subjects have been trying to deal with folks who actually do manufacture some of these competitive products, you know, overseas. So, but in this particular bill, we do have some concerns with the bill, and like we have in the past, have testified on these particular bills when they are consistent with California. There is, on particularly the mercury vapor lamps, we have seen just some language here that's a little different than California, and so we want to work with the proponents again on the lighting portion. So, you know, we're not prepared today to say that the dash one is exactly identical, and so we'll be working with them on that. But I wanted to comment, I think it goes to Senator Hass's question about, you know, does California always do it perfect? And there's one example that that, you know, we would like an exemption in the bill that was adopted down in California, and that's for emergency lighting products. These are products that are not, voluntary products. They're mandatory products because of the life safety. You know, they're the, for instance, that exit sign when you need these particular products. And just to, for example, on these life safety products, to get to the market, you know, they're tested and listed in accordance with UL Safety Standard 924. This standard requires a charging the battery a minimum of 90 minutes of light output before dropping below this 87.5% of the nominal battery voltage. So we're not aware of any other requirement, strict requirement on the battery charging as required under this UL standard. And so we're concerned that the actual standard down there on these particular products will make it actually difficult to redesign the product by that 2017 date. And so we are concerned with the redesign, which would be a maybe a different battery, a bulkier sign, something totally different. And so in this case, this particular exemption has been asked for in the state of Washington as well. And so I know, as you mentioned from the previous panel, they are working their the process through in Washington. And so as for the two things, obviously light bulbs, which I think is we want to work with the proponents on making identical, but specifically to the exemption of these emergency lighting products, I think we're just asking for just emergency and egress lighting products are exempt from the requirement under that battery charging section. So that's what we would request in a revised dash one, and happy to answer any questions.
And I'll probably call Charlie back up because he's sort of a resident expert. Betsy.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Retail Council. And I think the first thing I wanted to mention before I forget is that we share Mr. Miller's concerns about emergency lighting changes. But the one thing that I did want to mention, I will be the only person, I guarantee you, that will bring this up to you, is in Section 3 of the dash ones, on page 23, there are standards for water usage for toilets, and I believe that the 1.3 gallons per flush represents a standard that has been put in place by what's called a water sense toilet or a water sense plumbing fixture, and that represents most of the plumbing fixtures that are sold by our retail members. However, there are some very low-cost units that are compliant with the federal standard of 1.6 gallons but not compliant with the 1.3. Those are in stock, and of course our members don't need to continue to purchase and carry those, but they have an inventory of them. They keep them because they are so low cost, and I am not entirely clear when the effective date for this section is. I think it might be 2014, and if it is, that would not probably give quite enough time to sell out of that limited stock.
I think it's 2016. January 1st, 2016, isn't it?
For Section 3.
Four, 2468. So
right.
3 is not.
3 is 2014.
Okay.
So that's my concern, is that it only gives us 12 months. So if we could, I did talk to Citizens Utility Board, and they thought we could work something out. So I was hoping that we could have just a limited exception for that one piece.
Okay. And I'll ask Charlie to come up, too, because I want to see if you can maybe address the first concern. And I don't know if you had any thoughts on the date.
I'm kind of agnostic about the date. I mean, if these things are in stock and the stock turnover is slow enough, there may be some reason to change the date or adjust the date to accommodate that, and I wouldn't see a problem with that. With regard to battery chargers for emergency exit lighting, the California Energy Commission did receive that comment and did look into that in some detail, and there are several types of that product certified to the database today that meet the standard. The charge control circuit that's required for this actually doesn't take up any space. It's actually a chip, and Texas Instruments is selling that enhanced chip for about 95 cents for that chemistry, the most typical chemistry of those, and on that capacity. So it's a pretty small amount of cost associated with a pretty good-sized charger. The California Energy Commission received testimony from a number of people who basically said that the standard would not impact its function, its fire and life safety function, battery life. It might actually extend the battery life a little bit because of the charge control. It does a much better job of charge control, but other than that, it would probably have no impact at all on the functionality of the system. So that was received and looked into in some detail in California, and they didn't find any reason. And that's a non-retail or non-consumer type battery charger, and it doesn't go into effect until 2017. So there's quite a little time for these folks to shift over and find the chip that they would like to buy.
And any other questions for the panel members here? Okay. Thank you for bringing the concerns forward, and we'll hear, I'm sure there might be some other folks before we decide what we're going to do about some of the different dates. Let's see, Brian Krieg and Joel Fisher. Brian, if you want to go first, you look like you're ready.
I can be ready. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, today my name is Brian Krieg, and today I'm here representing the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association. The Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association has over 200 contractor members throughout Oregon, employ about 3,000 plumbers across the industry. We're very supportive of green construction efforts. We're very much into work on energy efficiency. But I'm here today to raise a very strong concern from our industry in seeing this bill, which has come out very recently, and of course then there's new amendments to it here. Our industry wasn't aware that plumbing was going to be brought into this list. Didn't have much in the way of advance warning on here. The one of the things that we did, session was 2007, is the construction industry, knowing that we were facing a lot of new technologies coming our way and how to integrate them in with our building codes and for the industries to be able to work in an efficient manner, we put together the Oregon Construction Industry Energy Board. It's one of the boards housed at the building codes departments. It has a number of members from the various individual boards, such as electrical and plumbing, on it. It also has representation from ODO on it. This is one of the places where we look to see new technologies, new ideas for policy to come through, so we have a chance to look at them and vet them. This did not come through that process at all, and it seems that it has been worked on by a lot of folks, a lot of time and effort into it for some length of time. So we're very there's a very strong concern here that we were not included into this. Some of the standards may be fine on it, but with short notice, I'm not sure that we're ready to say that on there. Plumbing is a little bit different. You've got it mixed in the bill, a little bit of apples and oranges. Things like televisions, the battery chargers, other things are all standalone items, pretty much plug and play. Plumbing is a system. It's tied to many different components, and there are fire life safety issues that are involved with it also. And so this is the type of thing where we need to take a look at it from a little bit more of a holistic standpoint when making changes that will affect the code and the products that we're going to be using out there. So, and one of the comments also, and I'll go to the system issue here, was talking about the energy savings from the use of the lavatory faucet change. I have a three-story townhouse in Portland, one of the zero lot line type ones, various levels on it. The mechanicals are basically at the ground level. If I wash my hands in the lavatory at the ground floor, the efficiency there is much higher than when I go upstairs and have to wait for several minutes for the hot water to get up to the top. That's just a simple illustration of how these systems can work in a building and what you're trying for in achieving savings. There might be a lot of other factors we need to look at. So at this point, I'd like to urge the committee to consider pulling out the sections dealing with plumbing and letting the Construction Industry Energy Board take a look at the issue. Thank you.
And I will make a comment, Brian, that this is not the first time we've done plumbing fixtures in this bill. As you recall, we worked on some of the commercial sprayers and other things, and this is not my bill. This was worked on by a whole group, but this is not the first time. This is not just an energy efficiency bill. I mean, there has been plumbing fixtures in the past. I will ask, what we'll do is look at to see, you know, and certainly this is something that I can do because I have lots of contacts also in the construction industry, if these type of toilets are going to be a problem. I mean, my understanding is they're being used pretty widespread now, the low flow, and I've never heard that being an issue. But certainly as we look at the amendments, we'll ask you to talk to the plumbing board, and actually we have a plumbing board for the state of Oregon, so we'll go to them and see. My understanding is these products are going to be sold in California, and I will do the research to see what was looked at down there, because they do a lot of water efficiency down there. They probably have much higher levels of water efficiency than we do. And so I can see Charlie's taking notes, because I'm going to ask him to follow up on that.
Yes.
Thanks, Joel.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher, Senior Policy Analyst at the Oregon Business Association. OBA strongly supports the goal of increasing energy efficiency in ways that strengthen our economy, are economically efficient, and makes additional capital available for the Oregon economy. We're supportive of this legislation as it falls into that basic umbrella. It would make energy savings equates to dollar savings and would be an economic boon to Oregon energy and water consumers from families and schools to businesses and public buildings. And we urge your support.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Questions for either gentleman? Senator Bates.
How long would it take thank you, Madam Chair. How long would it take the plumbing board to vet this? I'm not a plumber, obviously, but it doesn't look like it's that complicated. Could you get it back in a few days, or is it something you think you have to take a lot of time with?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, I'm not really sure how long it would take them to do. I mean, normally they meet on a quarterly basis. There are ways that the Administrator, Mark Long, can reach out to them and have them review an issue and of this nature. It would be very useful to ask the Plumbing Board its opinion on here also, and whether the Energy Board is involved too. As I said, the Energy Board was kind of created to help vet these types of issues and speed the process along, and prefer to see it utilized for that on that. But both of those boards would be, they could be accessed fairly quickly.
We will check in with them. We have a long history with waterless urinals.
Chair Dingfelder, I was hoping you weren't going to go there.
That's not technically true, Chair.
No, we went back. Brian and I worked for a long time on waterless urinals with the plumbing board. But
that's my point, Chair. That's not technically true. They're waterless.
Yeah. But it went through the plumbing board. It's an inside joke because we spent months working on that. Brian's laughing because he knows it's true. I thought, I just had to bring that word up because I knew that we'd get a lot of trouble.
Can't control yourself, can you?
Any other questions?
Well, I would just be supportive of Senator Bates' question is to see what kind of turnaround. So if we can accommodate some meaningful things, I'd like us to try to do that. But we're going to need help from your side
because we can't
sit on this forever.
Chair?
Hold on. Senator Hass had a question.
Well, thank you. I think it just goes back to the original point that California has done this. In some ways, they're testing the waters.
No pun intended.
But they've got some 40 million people down there. This is in effect now. We would see some of those problems surface.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Haas, yes, you having California next to us as a large dominant economic force and does help in vetting the situation on there. Though I would tend to note, California has always, and for many, many years, having lived down there myself for about 12 years, very differing situations with their water use. So the cost-benefit analysis of a particular piece of equipment for its water efficiency in California might be at a very different cost factor for doing cost-benefit analysis than it would be here in Oregon. And there have been a few things that have come out of California that seem like a great idea and may have worked there. And I will point to EIFS, the foam siding on buildings, which has given us quite a bit of problem here with mold issues. Oregon as an example of that. So always want to err with some caution, especially in dealing with water because of the issue of fire life safety issues on it. Health.
But one of the things I will say, we, at least in my district, we have the second highest water and sewer rates in the West Coast. So certainly water savings for my constituents is a big deal because they do have very expensive rates. Senator, did you have another question?
No. Okay.
We will appreciate your bringing those comments forward, and we'll make sure, and we're going to have a little mini work group, so we'll make sure you're there, Brian, and I'm happy to make a call to the folks that I know on the plumbing board and talk to them, because it won't be the first time we've talked about urinals together.
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Darrell Fisher and Wendy Gerlitz. Actually, Darrell, why don't you go first because you were signed up first. We'll try to keep the protocol here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors Association. A little nervous about my penmanship that I'm Darrell Fisher, but I'll try to be a little bit better as I sign my name in the future. Madam Chair, I appreciate that you spent a lot of time on this issue over the last decade and that plumbing issues have been on the agenda. I'm new to the plumbing, heating, and cooling contracting industry, so this is new to me, so I apologize for retreading perhaps some old issues. plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors will install whatever's legally available and can be used. But we also have quite a few associate members who are both the manufacturers and the distributors of these products. And on their behalf, I have responses from a couple of our folks that are concerned about the deadline. You had a previous discussion about having products that are already in the marketing stream and whether or not those would be available after a date certain. And I was told, and this may not be correct, but I was told that at the federal level, whenever they increase the standards, they don't go with a date certain, they go with the manufacturing date of a product. So you set a time out there and say that if the product doesn't meet the standard at the manufacturing date, and that would allow them, the manufacturers and distributors to use the existing products they have in their inventory before the new standard comes in, as opposed to having a date certain where you may still have products on the shelves, because some products move faster than others. So I don't know if it would be something that the proponents of the bill would be willing to look at in terms of using a manufacturing date rather than a calendar date as you transition from one kind of product to another. That's probably our primary concern, and then I would agree with my colleague, Mr. Krieg, in terms of wanting to make sure that the folks over at the Building Codes Division have an opportunity to look at this information just to make sure there aren't some red flags that perhaps are being raised by folks down in California that we just haven't heard of up here. So I appreciate the chair's willingness to have them take a peek at it before we move forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and we're going to, I'm going to ask Jim Craven to come up. Unfortunately, he was out of the room. We talked about the manufacturers versus the sale date because we dealt with this last time as well, and so I might have him come up and talk about that representing manufacturers. But thank you for bringing that up. Wendy?
Sure. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Gerlitz. I'm with the Northwest Energy Coalition. The coalition is an alliance of more than 110 businesses, utilities, and public interest organizations working for clean and affordable energy throughout the Pacific Northwest. I'm very pleased to be here and want to express our enthusiastic support for Senate Bill 692. We are working on a similar bill up in Washington, and as I think John Audley mentioned earlier, working on this effort to make the Pacific Coast consistent with regard to these appliance standards. So I'm pleased to be here talking on behalf of this bill today. There's been a lot of discussion today. Charlie was up here. He covered the technical basis far better than I ever could, but there were a couple of things I just wanted to quickly point out. One thing is that in terms of energy use in households, one reason why the battery chargers to us is so important is that if you look at the trends over time, even though Oregon has implemented a number of efficiency activities in the residential sector, the residential energy use has actually remained somewhat constant per household over time. And one reason is that we're adding all of these electronic devices and phones and things that we're charging. And we feel that the battery chargers would, to help address their energy use, would really help address this and help us get that average household use down. We're lucky that it hasn't climbed. You know, we've done a lot of things. You mentioned refrigerators earlier, Chair, and other things that we've done, but we'd like to actually get it down over time, and so that the battery chargers in particular will help with that. With regard to plumbing, other than the date issues, which, you know, I don't think we have a strong opinion on the dates per se, but I think I didn't hear any other specific concerns, and I would just echo the sentiment that let's look to California, see what their experience has been. You know, they've got these standards going. I'm not aware of any problems, but would be happy, you know, to assist with research or any information gathering that we have a lot of connections in California and across the nation on these issues. So if I can be of any assistance, I'd be happy to do that. And then I'd just like to say this is a good package for Oregon's economy. You know, we're looking at, by 2018, the utility bill savings per year would be more than $23 million each year. And so I think that's a significant savings represented to consumers. So thanks for the opportunity to be here, and just look forward to seeing this move forward.
Thank you. Questions?
I have one.
Senator Olson.
I'm always curious when people come up with statistics as how much they can save. How did you figure that out?
Well, I think it was actually Charlie that figured it out, and I was just repeating. But I was looking at a chart that both Charlie and I believe my counterpart in Washington worked with national groups to put together estimated savings, and which would include electricity savings, and then what that translates into for bill savings. And so we could get you some more detailed calculations in writing if you would like that.
Follow up. My curiosity gets piqued when you say we have savings, but every year our electric bills go up. So I just wonder how that we save energy, but our my bills go up. So I just wonder how you can turn that into savings.
Right. Well, and some of it, as I was saying, with the residential energy use, some of it is measured as what would have happened, you know, what the electricity use of your home would have been had you not bought a new refrigerator or insulated your home. But, you know, in general, for those consumers that do energy savings, they will see a reduction, you know, in their energy bills. But, you know, when you aggregate it across the state or across a region, then, you know, that's when it gets more complicated. So.
And we've asked Charlie to put together that chart, so that will be helpful to get that. And also if you have the water saving figures as well. So I'm assuming you're looking at that as well. Is there any other questions for either of them? Either of these witnesses? Okay, thank you both very much. And, yep, I've asked Jim Craven, who I've worked on these types of legislation. Jim represents the manufacturers, and we spent many years together working on this type of legislation, and I think it's important to hear from the manufacturers because we've not heard from the manufacturers yet.
So. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Jim Craven on behalf of Tech America. Tech America is a national trade association that represents the technology industry. Included among our members are some big manufacturers of equipment that I see up here on the desk, Apple, Dell, Hewlett-Packard, lots of different manufacturers. We've wrestled with this issue in California, and I guess what I was asked to share with you is on this, particularly in the small battery charger part of this debate, that if we are exactly adopting the California standards exactly, and then we don't have a problem. And the reason we don't have a problem is because we don't manufacture products on a state-by-state basis. We generally design to the highest existing standards. Sometimes that standard is a European standard. Oftentimes it is. But we don't make Oregon laptop computers or Idaho laptop computers. We make laptop computers, and we sell them through distribution channels, and some of them wind up in a Best Buy in Oregon, some of them will wind up in Idaho. Even if we wanted to try to make products on a state-by-state basis, the difficulty of distribution would probably make it not possible. So I appreciate that people are taking a very close look at all this. I've asked some of the smart people in my industry to, you know, get the California standards out in this bill and take your fingers and go through and just make sure, and I think everyone's doing that. I encourage that process to move forward. Finally, I would just like to thank Senator Haas for bringing up the always welcome skepticism about just because California did it, we should take our own fresh look at it. There's several things maybe they do down south of here that we might want not to, not this particular issue, but other issues. So anyway, I think it's always good. I think it's good to have a big driving market maker like California on some of these standards. But it's also good to say, let's make sure they work for Oregon and make sure that they're a good deal for Oregon, too. So I just appreciate that comment. So,
thank you. Any questions for Jim? Manufacturers? Okay. Anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Okay. I'll go ahead and close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 692. And I'm going to ask the folks who, I think there were three people, Betsy Earls, Sean Miller, and Brian Krieg, and Daryl Fuller. I didn't hear a new issue. I just heard sort of that we have some of the same concerns, except for the sale date. So I'll make sure we get some response to you on that. So I'm going to have you three come up, and we'll try to get a date we can sit down together and work out some of these issues. I think, do we have anything else, Beth, on the agenda today? And next Wednesday we have, so this won't be ready for work session, so we'll end up holding that over. And then we have up for Wednesday. We've got some new bills. Actually, I think we have the Waldo Lake bill.
Yes, you do.
So we'll be sailing away on on that one. With that, unless there's any other questions, we are adjourned. And you're out early.